Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rod Gontos.
Rod Gontos.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, sir. Let's get you on the mic. There we go.
How are you?
I'm good. You seem a little subdued today.
I am subdued. I am trying to do a cleanse.
Oh. I always wonder what that would be
after Easter and family meals.
Do you actually go as far as you take certain supplements to try and literally break down what's in your colon and flush it all out?
No, it's just called don't overeat and all the stuff that you really want to eat, you know, give that up.
I've always wondered, a real colon cleanse, which is supposed to be kind of severe and it makes
you
feel like...
You are really...
I want to go into this.
You know what? Great choice of words right there. You got to go into this. We're talking colon cleanse, coming right out of the chute.
These are the topics that fascinate me at 61.
Now, and you know, when I see you at 61 as a baby boomer start talking about stuff like this.
Fascinating.
Didn't we talk about Depends last time?
Yes. We don't call them Pampers. So we don't want to be pampered.
We want dependable. I understand you're pretty anal about stuff.
Anal, another word here. You're all right. Okay.
Right. Fritzy is looking at us like, is this happening? It happens every week. This is every week. But no, I mean, I worry about you when you start talking about colon cleanse and stuff like that. Do we need to take a break? Do you need, you know, is everything okay?
I used to talk football. Now I talk colon cleanse. That's
I mean, I should check in with you. Is everything okay? I haven't seen you for a week. All things good?
I'm feeling a little better that the world didn't blow up over Easter. I was afraid there for a while.
Oh, you were thinking about the fact that a particular ship maybe that was going in the wrong direction would be...
We were sending a fleet there to bomb him if he did this, and he did it anyway, and then was like, oh, sorry, we didn't really send the fleet after all.
Well, we actually didn't know where the fleet was. No, okay. All right. Well, you know, everybody's entitled to a moment of loss of memory and disorientation.
Yeah. And at 70, that happens
at
a lot.
70, it happens a lot. You can't find the bathroom at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's right.
Can't find your... Is he still using a BlackBerry?
He probably uses Depends.
Never mind. Okay. All right. We have touched on everything now. We can just call it a day. Oh, wait. We got a guest in there.
We have a guest. Oh, wow. He's probably ready to walk out.
So what do you think, Fritzy? Do you really want to be here right now?
Oh, absolutely. And frankly, the month of February, I did a detox.
Did you? No, seriously, I always wonder if that's really valuable. I know people have done it, my sister-in-law and others, and it's kind of severe because they say that as it starts to unleash, as you start to flush the stuff out of your colon, you can actually get sick.
Yeah, we're shaking our head at you if anybody's watching us. No. We're just shaking at you. I don't know what kind of, you know, corporal punishment, cleanse thing.
I'm just saying the fact, but it does.
Is this just a Roberts family approach to
things? It can give you a flu-like symptom.
Was there wooden spoons being used? No, I was talking to an Italian yesterday. We were talking about wooden spoons as part of the regiment of child raising back in the day. And we were she's told me basically that, and it was somebody who was a guest, so I'm not going to say who it is. But she said, oh, yeah, you know, if I had every broken spoon that my mother broke on my backside, basically, as growing up, I said, you know, so we should just skip the bronzing of baby shoes. We should just bronze broken wooden spoons and put them on the little.
That's what we should memorialize here.
Right. It's like, remember, you know, at the age of 10. And then she said, yes, but that would mean that the spoons would just keep getting bigger and thicker as you get older. So
was the detox worth it? That's all I want to know.
Well,
was it worth it?
So there's a number of things you can do. There's a cleanse. There's a detox. No, if you really want to know.
I really want to know.
There's a cleanse. There's a detox. There's what they call an intermittent fasting that you do. Okay. And it depends on the severity. That's really kind of up to you. I have there's a lady that has a program called a 5-day intermittent fast down in South County. It's 4 days literally of food that's prepped for you. It's about 800 calories a day.
Wow.
So it's a controlled intake, but everything is spelled out, and it's 4 days, 4.5 days. So it's totally doable. And most people, it's not just a weight loss shedding, which happens,
right,
but it's also almost, imagine your car being taken in after not really being tuned up. It's kind of retuning up your body.
Hmm.
So there's that aspect of it. There's the cleanse aspect of it that can be for a whole range of different things, including detox. Like you could detox from maybe too much sugar or whatever it is, and sometimes that's medically called out for it. Like, you know, we're going to basically...
Alcohol.
Yeah, detox from alcohol. There we go with the Roberts thing again.
I'm Irish.
Okay. You're Irish, I know. So there are things that like that, and I think it all comes down to this, is that, you know, we're staying healthier, quote-unquote, longer, or we're staying alive longer. So the quality of life that you can basically control, first and foremost, is in things like your food intake, your choice of nutrition, exercise,
right,
things like that. I shared with you my dad's cousin, who I saw when I was in Northern California a couple of weeks ago. He's 95 years old. He walks 4 miles a day around his neighborhood,
mm-hmm,
okay? And he basically does, he's an accountant by training, and he managed a couple of banks. So he does spreadsheets for the church for activities. He gets in contention with the church and the city on things that the church wants to do. So there's a feistiness that's keeping him
a fight. Yeah.
Right? And he basically, ironically, balances his checkbook, his wife's checkbook, his daughter's checkbook, and if his son doesn't give him his checkbook to balance, he'll go get it from him, right, by hand.
Wow.
I'll ask him.
Yeah.
I'm saying, Uncle Alex, Paul might need you to balance this checkbook.
So I just wanted to ask the guest. So you went through
it. So it's a healthiness.
You went through it. Okay, so was it worth it?
Was your cleanse worth it?
Yes, it was a detox. So
we'll get you a little closer to the mic.
It was a detox. It was an eating program.
Uh-huh.
So special teas twice a day.
Right.
Sugar, no caffeine. Yeah. It was more of what you described as an internal tune-up.
Yep.
And there didn't seem to be any of those Robert's family reactions to it.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people actually do get like flu-like symptoms as you do this.
Well, early on, when you give up sugar,
yeah,
that's really harder on your body than giving up the coffee and the big headache.
Really?
So for a couple of days, but it's also the same, like when you start yoga, for example, when you start a consistent yoga program, the first week you think that you've got the flu.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's the
I've
same thing,
yeah,
because
right,
your muscles are releasing toxins in a different way.
Well,
exactly.
and
it's all part of that.
So, see, I'm not crazy. I am crazy, but
we've talked about sort of massage and that kind of a therapeutic kind of regimen being part of a regular wellness regimen, because it's all really maintenance. It's really all maintenance to what it is that you as a quality of life. Like if you tell me, well, you need to just get on a fitness program, you gotta go to the gym and walk out and bulk out. And I'm like, fine, where's the remote control and give me a bag of chips? Okay, I mean, it's just not interesting to me. But if you look at it in terms of being able to be mobile, being flexible, being agile, you know, I mean, there's the ad now that's running all over TV with the guy with the inverter.
Yeah,
Teeter. I mean, I'm thinking, could we come up with a better name than Teeter when the largest problem with seniors is falling?
Yeah, right.
Right? I'm teetering.
Yeah.
That's not
a good brand placement there, but it's okay. But the guy's been doing this since, like, you know, God knows, like 87 or something. He's been selling these things. And here is another thing that, done regularly, because we sit so much, can help realign the spine, which then basically helps take the burden off your core, which then helps you, you know. So it's not an aesthetic thing. It's not a pampering thing. These things that we're talking about are regular well-being and wellness. And if you're sticking around, we're all sticking around longer. I mean, to say somebody is like 95 these days is not a big deal. 115, getting to be where some kind of acceptable at 100, 105, you know? And so more and more so, we're going to be around a lot longer. So what kind of condition is the chassis that you're riding around in? Pretty important.
So listen, to introduce your guest, we brought her in secretly here. Tell her who she is and what she does.
Fritzi, why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay. Good morning. Afternoon. I'm Fritzi Grodeon. And I am the founder of Household Guardians in San Diego, and I am the chief advocacy officer with AgeSafe America. and author of the book Grace and Grit.
I'm going to point that out to the camera, too.
Point that out to the camera?
I'm assuming we're live?
Yes.
Okay. Paul's doing his job.
Thank you, Paul. It's Insights to the Real-Life Challenges of Aging for Adult Children and Their Parents. So that's a little bit about
it. Let me just say this, because we talk about pretty much challenges about aging every single
that's
week.
That's what this
okay?
show is.
So I want to just kind of emphasize that when we say in this particular case, I mean, there's all the human aspects of the challenges, mm-hmm. but it's really, and it says so in the back of your book, the challenges of moving from one home to the next are frequently faced by two generations, seniors and adult children, right? And that's typically when there isn't maybe so much prepared planning, right. which we'll touch on, right? And preventive planning. This is sort of like 11th hour, got to do it. One of my Facebook friends right now is basically, he's moving stuff out of, his mom, and it's both consolidating and getting rid of stuff and all the emotionality that comes with that, especially if you have, the senior is aware, and all of a sudden their stuff is... Not only are they being moved out of their house, but their stuff that's familiar to them now is, half of it's in the dustbin and half of it's going to Goodwill, and, they're carrying like a satchel over to wherever they're going to go. That's pretty traumatic emotionally, right?
Oh, it is. It's very rough. And for 10 years in New York, I was a senior move manager.
Okay.
And in that industry, that's what those professionals do, is they help the client manage the process and help the adult children,
right.
grown children, manage that process as well. And part of that business is related to the downsizing and sorting and packing,
right.
and giving the client really the amount of choice possible,
right.
given the size of the future space.
So can I jump in here and interject my own, as I always do every week, my own personal experience?
I love how you basically asked the question,
but I
and
did
then
it anyway.
Justified
of
the
course.
Reasoning.
Because otherwise everybody say, why is he talking?
We require a certain minimum amount of intellect in this radio station.
My aunt, as we know, is 92. Anybody's listened to the show?
You know what?
Lives alone.
By the way, you always refer to, you've been referring to this lady out in the desert
mm-hmm.
as your aunt.
Right.
Okay, for 2 years.
Right.
I have no clue. I feel like I know this person, like I can basically pick up the phone. I have no clue what her name is.
Her name is Florence Keating.
Florence Keating. Okay.
Keating. There's some old name.
So does she go by Flo or Florence?
We're going to get down a side avenue here. When my mother was,
I just want to know what to greet her when I basically when she comes up.
Florence. Yeah, Florence.
Hi, Florence. We're talking about you.
All right.
Go ahead, Paul.
Although in our family we have a nickname for her, so that's just whatever.
Okay. And I'm going off on a tangent. Okay, go ahead.
So she is 92, lives alone, has very little money, and a severe rare form of cancer called Waldenstrom's that kills all her red blood cells. So she's always very anemic. She basically lives alone as a shut-in almost in this little apartment out there because she really can't afford to go anywhere. And so we've, for the last year, I'm her only living relative. She never got married, doesn't have any kids, so I'm it. And I go out and see her every week. And every week we talk about, you got to go somewhere. We got to find someplace. Well, the only places she can afford are tiny, like little tiny studios.
Well, it's your outing, right? I mean, every week you go out there, it's your outing. What are we going to do this week?
Yeah. And we go look at these things, and she comes back and says, I can't do it. I can't move into that small a space. I can't give up all of my wonderful stuff. And I look around, sorry, Auntie, I look around and I see all this stuff that looks like junk to me, mostly, but it's stuff she's had for 50 years, 60 years.
Well,
it all means something.
It means something. It gives her a sense of safety, probably.
And that is the number one reason that she has not moved. I mean, money's a big part of it, and these places are very expensive. But we figured out she could afford the littlest of the little, these little studio things, about $2,500 a month she could afford. And so there are a couple places we found, and they're nice facilities, and they're nearby. But she can't pull the trigger because she can't accept downside. And I say, it's trading space for security. And she says, I don't want to make that trade-off yet.
Let me ask you something, Paul.
Yeah.
Since now I feel like I know Aunt Florence. What kind of regular oversight or care does she need given that medical condition? Is this something that she can manage herself?
Yes and no. She's lived alone her whole life. She's very independent. She's very feisty. She's very mentally sharp.
By the way, just let me say, yeah. I have a reason why I'm asking and building this picture, because then we're going to go back and use it
as an
example.
She needs help because it makes her very anemic and weak. And the more weak she is, the less she walks. And now her legs have, as we've talked about before, have swollen up, doubled in size because of edema buildup and lymphedema and all this stuff. Her legs are literally look like gigantic.
So what is she doing for to manage that her life right now? What kind of help does she have?
Nothing. Just she hangs on. She gets Meals on Wheels every day that comes in that keeps her alive. The lady, we're Catholic, so the lady comes once a week to give her communion. And that's it. That's her only human contact all week, other than when I come out.
So Meals on Wheels, communion once a week, and you.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
So that...
And she watches TV incessantly.
Well, the reason why I'm asking is because I'm looking at Fritz's flyer for Household Guardians, and the first thing it says on there is understand the current situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she doesn't need help with medication. She doesn't need help. She could use a little help bathing, but she doesn't need help. She has a little stool that she sits on and a hand wand to help bathe. So she can manage that. The littlest things are what she has a couple little people in her apartment complex to take out her trash and get her mail and do some other things for her. She can't drive, so she can't go anywhere. And she basically just sits in that apartment all day.
And how old is Antoine?
She's 92. She could be 93 this summer.
So... I compare that with, like I was saying, my uncle Alex in mm-hmm. Northern California, where he's
different
living
situation.
With his wife, his daughter that never got married, they're in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got another daughter and son, and their families nearby, mm-hmm. as well as my other
he's
uncle.
He's got a support network.
So there's
right.
a support network, right?
Right.
And I want to point out that more likely than not, I don't know if you agree with me, Fritz, or not, maybe you, from your experience, actually, let me ask you this question. Which of those situations is more prevalent?
Mm.
Or is it just... And if it's not a one-size-fits-all, I want people to hear that. Like, this is not like you can just define. This is what every senior is dealing with. Every situation has its own dynamics.
Right. And it's funny because... We want to say one size fits all, and it's really one size fits one.
Yeah.
So certainly I would recommend my book to Paul in terms of looking at the variety of dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Here you go. You need more grace. You already got a lot of grit, but there you go.
Yeah.
She has a lot of grit. I'll tell you, she's had tremendous grit.
Right. And she absolutely does. And the stories in the book are describing things both from both generations' points of view. So she might actually find some insight herself into some of the situations.
Mm-hmm.
But the isolation is among really the biggest of the problems for us, and it's very hard to document that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say to you that 60% of seniors are isolated,
mm-hmm.
because what's isolated to one person, I mean, your Uncle Alex... If he didn't have two people,
right,
he would feel isolated.
So what you're saying is the degree of isolation varies, again, depending on what people's lives have been with. If you're very antisocial or social or introverted or extroverted, you're right. That's a good point. It's not everybody's level of isolation. But I will say I agree with you. Isolation is a major problem when it comes to seniors, and we've had situations where isolation goes bad, and now it's basically grounds for abuse, taking advantage of, all kinds of stuff that happens.
Right.
So, she mostly, if you ask her, she'd say, I'm pretty happy and I'm pretty self-sufficient, but that's the way her whole life's been. She's never had people around. She's always been isolated.
Right.
My mother-in-law is kind of the same thing. I wouldn't say that, you know, there's a house full of people all the time.
Right.
And there's just people's different comfort levels.
Right. Now, when it doesn't look so good, as like last night when I left her, then she tears up and says, I'm so lonely and I'm so scared. And both of us, because she's fallen a number of times, obviously. She doesn't move around very well. She's anemic anyway, and then she's got these bloated legs that make it even more difficult to move. And, of course, she's never exercised her whole life, and she doesn't eat well. She just eats Meals on Wheels and cookies and candy. That's what she lives on. And but that's been her whole life. I can't change that pattern in 92.
So, Fritzie, you said you were involved in senior transportation or moving, right? Relocation. Right.
I did that in New York.
How many years would you say you've been involved in the senior service industry?
Since 2001.
Okay. So that's a good amount of time, and I think a lot of people don't realize that there's been a lot of changes that have happened in that period of time, and just in terms of everything from the person who is basically looking for care to the way that the care is delivered to regulations and restrictions. I mean, I know we had a caregiving, some new regulations that hit the state of California last year. So this is a very fluid situation that everybody probably ignored and wanted to push off forever and ever, right? And it's finally like, you can't do that anymore. So you either are an active member, active participant in predetermining or proactively setting up these things in your own life or in a loved one's life, or you're going to be on the receiving end of the 11th hour fire drill, right? Oh, I got to do this now. Yeah. Somebody's being discharged in 3 days, that kind of thing.
Right, absolutely. Right?
And that's the fear. I know that eventually one of these falls for break, you have to do something, and then game's up. And she knows that too. But until that moment comes, she wants to live every moment she can with as much space, with as much dignity, with as much independence. Part of it is the feeling that she knows once she goes in there, she's not coming out. Once she knows that once she downsizes it, she's now in an institution and not independent. All of those things, and she has to give up her stuff. And even though she basically just sits in the living room and watches TV all day.
Let me ask something. So, and then I'm going to ask you a question. Is there any regulation? I mean, I would almost share that same concern. Like, oh, my God, the minute I check in, it's like Hotel California. I can never check out.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything that says somebody can't just check themselves out?
No, they can't. Well, and this isn't a facility. This is,
yeah, right.
She would be going into independent living, so it's month-to-month contract. She could leave anytime she wants. But they never do, because once you've given up all your stuff, where are you going to go?
Well, I'm just trying to emphasize that because it almost seems like, okay, this is the end. This is God's waiting room. I'm just basically going to stand. So, Fritzy, how have you seen, from your own unique vantage points, how have you seen this environment where seniors, you were on the East Coast, now you're in California. Do you see that this has changed? Is it where we need to be? Are we behind the wheel? I mean, we got a population that's getting up there in age, like faster than anything, 10,000 a day, hitting 65.
Right.
Are we ready for this?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, we're not. And when you look at the number, there are 58,000 Americans over the age of 100.
Wow.
Okay, now, what will happen in less than 10 years is that number is going to grow exponentially. So we could have 500,000 people over the age of 100 before 2030.
Mind-boggling.
And so if we're not prepared, because it's entirely possible that Aunt Florence, even though for those of us who are just hearing about her, it's entirely possible that given whatever support it is, it may be enough. Mm-hmm. And we may have Aunt Florence for another 8 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I'll preface it by saying, why did she come to California? She was born and raised in Minnesota, where all my mother's relatives lived. And she came out here because 20 years ago, literally 20 years ago, almost to the day, she was diagnosed with this rare form of blood cancer and was given 5 years to live. So she thought, I'll come out and live with my only sister. My mom and dad were alive, lived in Palm Desert, and I'll spend my final years with her because I have nobody else. Except my mom and dad died along the way. Mm-hmm. Her doctor died. And 20 years later, she's still alive. She didn't expect to live 20 years. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have any savings. She has a little tiny retirement that gives her $2,500 a month and Social Security, thank goodness. Because in those days, being a secretary gave you a little retirement. She'd really be in trouble if she didn't have that. And so she has $2,500 a month, no savings, no house, no family, no nothing. And she soldiers on.
So how does Aunt Florence, that could be looking at another 5 to 15 years, who knows, right?
I'd say five years.
How does she stay in at home doing that? What can she do? Is it even a plausible situation? I mean, you're going to just, for the next 5 years, just going to go out every weekend and basically look at retirement communities?
And I go buy her groceries. I go stock her up for the week. Somebody brings her food. Somebody, a little boy in the neighborhood, takes her trash out and gets her mail. And she wears one of those, life alerts falls.
Is that life-sustaining or is it life-enhancing?
Well, it's not life-enhancing, but at this point, she's just trying to hang on.
Right. And that's like the book, Being Mortal.
Yeah.
Do you read? Mm-hmm. One of the premises is what is it that makes your best day? Mm-hmm. And it sounds like right now for Aunt Florence, her best day is still this, as opposed to what she believes to be going to live in a closet.
Right.
And
that's how she refers to it, as a closet.
Well, she sounds like a very independent woman.
Yeah, well, she's
that is holding on to this as a form of her exercising her independence.
That's right, and she's retaining, especially for her generation, the two words are dignity and control.
Yes,
and the only way for her to find herself accepting a move to someplace that would be smaller, where there would be more support for her.
Right.
And like my concern really is also about the edema, personally, and I'm not a doctor, but the only way to do that is really to help her understand that she's making that decision and that she can see how that will make this time easier for her. Give her some dignity. Give her some control. If she hasn't had socialization, telling her that there's a bingo game and puzzles and a movie at 3, that may not be what she's
doesn't
really
it, it turns her off. In fact, the couple of times we've been over, just to give you, I mean, in my life, she's, I'm sorry, Aunt, we've talked about this many times. She is happy to be alone. She's learned to be happy to be alone. She's lived her whole life alone. So most of the time she's happy to be alone. Loves watching TV, fascinated with the world, watches Fox News religiously from morning till night, literally, and will debate and discuss every world event going on. That's what keeps her involved and interested. And so I take her to these places. And immediately, these little old ladies come over and said, "Hi, are you moving in? Oh, what's your name?" And she immediately says, "No, I don't want this. I don't want somebody knocking on my door telling me it's time to come down and eat. I don't want them telling me about their dead husbands. I don't want them telling me about gossiping about other women. I don't want that."
So what causes her to continue to go and look?
Is it fear? She's frightened. As I just flicked through the book, you can't imagine how frightened you get over every little fall, every little stumble, every little thing in there is waiting for disaster to happen. And she has fallen a number of times. The typical scenario, she'll call me up at midnight and say, "I can't get up. I can't sit up." And I'm like, "Well, what do you want me to do? Race out there again?" And if she can't get a hold of me, she calls emergency and has a ambulance come and pick her up. And they take her to a thing, and she's convinced they'll find something this time. And they say, "There's nothing there. Your legs are swollen. You have edema from your cancer. You're weak. What do you want us to do?" And they discharge her. The last time, they literally put her in a taxi and sent her back home. And then she sits there until the next time she can't get up.
So, Fritzi, I think that pretty much describes the challenges dealt by, children.
And the doctor looks at me horrified and says,
"That's a good example of what dynamic could be going on between two generations."
Absolutely.
And the doctor looks at me, and everybody's listening to this horrified, saying, "What are you doing? What can I do? I can't pick her up and take her there. I wish I had the money to pay for it myself. I don't. She won't move in with me. I just have an upstairs bedroom, and she can't go up and down the stairs, nor would she even consider moving in with me."
So how does Paul and Aunt Florence face that challenge?
One of the things that I might suggest is that to take a little bit of the stress off Paul is to consider a companion-only home care company, which is not care. It's like a non-medical retired senior volunteer corps, seniors helping seniors, just to have somebody else physically 2 hours, one day a week, whatever it is, to give you somebody with kind of eyes on Aunt Florence in the interim. Mm-hmm. The other option is, and I don't know which life alert system she has, but there are some that also have additional sensors and occupancy sensors, more ways for you to be able to tell what's going on with
her. Inside the living room.
Inside the space.
Never knew that. Yeah.
So,
because one of the frustrations, I'll give you another real-life example, happens quite a lot. She's other than that, she's very sharp, but she's hard of hearing also. So she won't hear the phone. and the phone will ring, 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 ring. And I have only a couple other cousins that are back in Minnesota that will also periodically call, and then they all tell me, well, you got to do something. You got to do something. I'm like, what do you want me to do? I can't race out there every night. She won't move in with me. She won't move anywhere else. She's adamant about staying where she is, and yet she's frightened and tells them how fearful she is. Okay, so she won't answer the phone. And sometimes it'll go on for a day. And then finally I have to call the police, and they go out and open up and do a check. The apartment complex will not check because they refuse to go in the building and look to see if she's even alive. I used to have neighbors, but they come and go all the time, so there's no neighbor to check on her. So I have to call the police, and periodically, once every couple of months, they go out and knock on the door, and I have a hidden key, so they don't have to break. They used to have to break the door, and now I tell them where the key is, and they walk in, and she's sitting there watching TV, and then they talk to her for a while, and they go home. That happens a lot.
So you can get a caption call, and you can get her a free phone that lights, that has a flash on it, a strobe, so she knows somebody's calling.
Well, we have it through, I thought I'd do sort of the thing, it's through the cable company. So when she's watching TV, which is what she does 20 hours a day, it flashes my name on the screen that Paul is calling. You know, like when you use the same phone. So I thought that would work, but sometimes she's laying down or whatever or something.
Right. So you can provide some other kinds of products that may help her do that. And one would be a phone that flashed in addition to having somebody's name come up on the screen.
It's usually a couple, more than one thing that you need to provide to augment the space.
I'll give you another.
Yeah, to your point, if she's laying down or she's not having to be looking at that screen at that time, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I'll give you another crazy thing. This is a perfect example. This past weekend I'm out there. And for years, the doctors have said you need to elevate your legs to keep the edema down. And she refuses. Nah, pah, I'm not going to do it. Doesn't do any good. Dah, what do they know? And just like my mother used to do. And so finally I said to her, you got to do something. What's the real problem? Why aren't you doing this? She has a stool in front of her chair. She said, well, the stool's too high. I said, that's it? Mm-hmm. So I said, well, let's go find that ratty one in the back room here and put that. Well, that one's ugly. That's why I stuck. I don't care. We're going to stick it out. It's 4 inches lower. And now when I left her, she's like, oh, that's much better. And now she's putting her leg up. It was just because the stool was really the issue, and she never wanted to. And she didn't want to put the other one out because it was ugly.
Understanding the current situation.
There you go. Yeah. And would she consider a reclining chair?
Well, this is even crazier. So she hates her chair. She's bought this chair five, 6 years ago, and it was a beautiful chair, but now it's too low, and it's too hard to get out of, and it's become worn because she sits in it. She's always saying, we're going to buy a new one, a new one, a new one. So all of a sudden, we go to a new doctor this on Monday, and he says, again, you got to do it. And he says, well, how about a reclining chair? And she says, well, and we both look at ourselves so stupidly. She has a brand new one in the back bedroom she's never used. Never used it.
Would you like me to go with you?
Please.
I would be delighted just to take a quick walk through Aunt Florence's house and see what
we can do. Well, it's 2 hours way out in Bermuda Dunes, out in Palm Desert out there. But yeah,
trust me, I'm going out to give a speech there next Tuesday.
Well, I'll give your name and you can stop by. She loves it when people stop by. She does that because periodically when I've had, you know, like if she gets discharged out of the hospital, the visiting nurse will come for a month or two. That's almost
treat. Here's why. Having an outside set of eyes sometimes on a situation. I mean, they'll tell you this in therapy. They'll tell you this in all kinds of evaluations.
Oh, yeah. I never saw the stool as a problem.
Right. No. You are too close to the trees to see the forest. Right. And you probably have a dynamic that's both on a personal level, a dynamic in terms of just interaction in the space, in her space. You know, sort of a repeat pattern that isn't really leading to anything with you basically going out and visiting facilities all the time.
We visit the facility every month.
Why don't you guys just go sit outside for a while? And just forget about, you know, I think there's a part of you, but
Monday we're going back to another one.
But I think there's a part of you, Paul. I mean, I'm just looking at it from the outside. Okay. I think there's a part of you that basically feels that maybe by visiting those facilities, you are opening her, you know, maybe it's this time.
Yeah.
And there's another part of you that's probably like, well, I am doing my
duty
role as a caregiving for my aunt by taking her to these facilities. And which brings up into the discussion another thing, which is what is really appropriate care? And I think, again, it's not a one-size-fits-all. You know, it might be just sitting outside, you know, going to something that she maybe likes to do that she hasn't done in forever because, you know, there's this thing about it's the urgency. We got a problem. We got to solve it.
Yeah.
And yet
right.
every week we're going and trying to solve it. And that for the last 52 weeks, we have visited 52 facilities, but we really haven't had any quality of time doing something that may be actually meaningful.
Well, the one thing she loves to do, and the other reason we always do, we go. She has always adored going out to dinner. So that, mm-hmm. so I got her a transport chair years ago to solve that problem because she. So I put her in the wheelchair. You know, it's not easy. I put her in the wheelchair. I put her in the car. Put the wheelchair in the trunk. Take it out. Put her. You know, all this stuff. It's there's a bunch of effort that goes with that. But then she gets there and she has a blast. You know, so we go out to dinner. We have two or three places we go to, and that's always part of the thing. And she'll go to dinner at the drop of, no matter how sick, tired, awful, complaining life is, if I say, you want to go to dinner, she's got her coat on.
And when she says dinner, is she totally like just focused on you, or is she interacting with her environment?
No, we just talk and laugh, and
do you see a change in her mannerism when she's in that environment versus this other environment?
Well, she's pretty happy most of the time. I you know, other than when she's scared, and that happens more over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I understand.
The fear is when then she gets weepy and whiny and scared and all that stuff, and I got to go somewhere. I got to do something.
I'll tell you a perfect example. Okay, for me. I remember when my grandfather passed away, when he was basically mobile and everything, but he had some medical issues. He had mm-hmm. medical issues. And he would literally, they were in Chicago, he would walk around the house mm-hmm. because it was too cold to walk outside. But he had this regimented cycle where he basically right. would just do the circuit around the house, right? And, you know, he would then lean in where everybody was sitting and talking and stuff, and he would just like, you know, he turned into like, you know, unbelievable. He stuck his nose in everybody's business because
yeah, right.
you know, he had his work, and then I have no work,
so he would do
the circuit, and then he would kind of lean in,
yeah.
and then throw in a couple of nuggets, and then come around and lean in. So the one thing that, because my aunt, who had never gotten married, was living with them, so she took care of my grandmother and then my grandfather, and my
right.
grandmother passed away first, and then my grandfather was fine, and then he ended up with Parkinson's and ended up passing away. But
that was kind of my aunt's role in the family. She stayed and took care of the mom and the dad
right.
when everybody else left.
Right? So and now my aunt, who's in her 80s, basically is in Chicago in the house, kind of alone, but she has a very dynamic social thing, mm-hmm. which even includes being at senior centers. Mm-hmm. And because her brother used to live across the street, her brother basically and his wife moved to Northern California because their kids are there and their grandkids are there. And so the dynamic in the family kind of shifted,
right?
Right? But she's doing fine. And I have sort of a concern about her because of her age. And every time I have a concern about her because of her age, I get pictures that she's on a friggin' cruise somewhere, right, or something. So again, it's not a one-size-fits-all.
But you know what the difference between the stories that you told and the story? There's two things, I think, that divide seniors into two classes, those that are doing well and those that are struggling. And one is health. If you can't walk or you're sick or you're anemic, she just couldn't go on cruises
right.
and stuff,
right.
no matter what she had. And others' money. She's broke.
No, I understand that, Paul. What I'm saying is, where I was going with this, is my grandfather.
Right.
Okay. He loved French fries. Okay. But he couldn't eat salty stuff and things of that nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my aunt, in the giving, being a caregiver, went to such an extent that everything was bland.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so we would actually be the bad grandkids who would
sneak in
French fries for grandpa on an occasion, right?
Right.
And the guy would light up.
Right.
And this is a freaking French fry, okay? It comes out of the ground,
yeah.
you fry it, and I'm giving it to you. And it's not like I'm giving you a huge bowl of it. It's just, here's like a, you know, this was before everything being supersized, right? Here it is. And so, again, I keep wanting to say that if there's something that puts a glimmer of light in somebody's eye.
Right.
The fact that we need to try to fit them into a mold should take a back seat to what it is that really works for
And them. I don't disagree with that, but I only think, and then I'll let your guests, we're doing all the talking here, I'll let your guests react to this, that when they have no money or health problems, the game changes. My aunt would, if she had the money, probably move faster, but it's a fear, and I can't. These places are $4,000-$6,000 a month. We've looked at. She doesn't have that money. I don't have that
money.
Well,
so her option is to stay where she is,
right?
Right, and as long as she can,
right.
So how can she do that, Fritzy?
How are her medical expenses covered?
She has a blue card, again, from her employer. She has a this is a long story, but she had Blue Cross coverage for all these years. She worked for 40 years, and she's been retired for 40 years. She's why companies gave up on giving retirees insurance, because she has, and she goes to the doctor every week. She used to, for anything. She would get the most, I don't care, I'm not paying for it. I'll get every test in the planet. And she did it all the time, and they happily complied. I shouldn't name her company here, but Hartford Insurance, that she used to work for, did what many companies are doing, the unthinkable. They dropped her. Sorry, we're dropping all. We know we made you promise we'll take care of you for life. Can't. So now she's on a Medicare Advantage plan that they worked out, which is an HMO, which still gives her coverage, but she doesn't like it because now she has to go get approval and all this other stuff, and go where she can't go see her own doctors anymore. She has to go to their prescribed doctors, and that's the process we're in now. So between Medicare and that, she still has her medical expenses mostly covered. She had some that she didn't. She was getting this expensive Procrit shot. It was $1,500 a pop that she had to pay. Her copay was $300, $400, $500 a pop. But that no longer works, so that's out. She fortunately doesn't have any other medicines or anything else.
At this rate, she might not even be able to afford to stay in where she is.
At some point,
then what?
Right.
Yeah, and then what is the overriding fear that I try and get her to talk about and she won't face, and I...
Now, Fritzy, with what you provide as services, I mean, it's not only understanding the current situation or whatever situation somebody's dealing with, also identifying, as you put it, future changes and planning ahead for them, which we talk about and we advocate all the time. Mm-hmm. Proactive, 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 million times better. You have more control about your independence, more options and choices. The sooner you get into this, at least as a conversation, and then beyond, right? Of course, there's uncomforts, there's, you know, existing dynamics between people and all this stuff. Right. But at the end of the day, if you don't do it, you really suffer and find that you have less and less options.
Right. You have far fewer options.
Right.
So what would you...
Would you say that it's ever really too early to talk about this? I mean, you know, Paul keeps reminding me he's 61 and telling me that I'm a baby boomer wannabe. But I keep looking at that and say, if I don't have this conversation today for my benefit down the road, I would have missed out on something. Because if I do it now, then I have a little bit more independent decision-making that I can do.
My aunt's at the point in her life where there aren't many choices, and the choices aren't, to her, none of them look good. So she hangs on and hangs on and hopes for tomorrow, one more day.
So let's put Aunt Florence for a second as not being maybe your typical situation, okay?
Okay.
You've been doing this for so long, in one capacity or another, as far as providing for care or services for seniors.
Right.
Just run it through a typical, if you will, after we just spent all this time talking about, and there's not a one size fits all. But just give us a scenario of maybe those calls that you get, like we are
or the kinds of
dealing
calls. So
with this situation.
Okay. Right. So a number of the calls that I get, because now my business here in California is really home modification or home accessibility.
To
help people stay in their homes. So my calls vary. They can be from a home care agency where they're working with a client. Mm-hmm. Client refuses to go for surgery because he knows when he comes out his home won't work for him.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me in touch with him and we did some work on his house. So then he could get the surgery, get the rehab, and come home and feel comfortable.
So you actually provided psychological assistance in a way by modifying the house first in order for him to be able to let go of this resistance to have the surgery that he needs in order to deal with a medical condition.
Right.
Fascinating.
And what was interesting, and part of the reason he was stubborn is his wife had dementia. So he knew that she
would... Bad reference point for him.
Right. So he knew that she wouldn't be able to deal with him after rehab and then try to still figure out how to do things in the house.
So he figured out just delay the medically required procedure.
Right. He was going to do that And so, luckily, his home care folks said, you know, this doesn't make much sense. We need to step
in. And truthfully, I saw this with my mom and my dad.
And I'm guessing it's
delay
not,
is the number one tactic. Delay.
But I'm guessing this was not necessarily an elective decision on the medical procedure he needed.
No, he was.
It was a necessary thing.
Yes, he was more and more immobile in his recliner as each day went by. So it was going to reach a critical point.
So he would have fulfilled his own prophecy, basically. Yes. Basically not being able to be mobile at all.
But you see, that's the fear of what happens next that will get you to delay or deny it or deal with it another day.
Right, but I'm trying to define this in this light because usually we don't take the time to focus that spotlight on this kind of almost innate insanity.
It's crazy.
Of this sort of nonsensical way of the, you know, emotionally justifying for ourselves that this is how we're going to behave. And I'm trying to replace it or at least provide an alternative saying, instead of the fear, if you actually engage with it, I mean, anybody, and we tend to know this as maybe when we were younger, when we were like, we'll go through fearless, and then, you know, I won't avoid anything, and I'm going to experience a whole life, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, you're like, oh, I'm a baby boomer that doesn't want to live anymore. Like, you know, kind of like, I'm not going to experience anything. I'm just sitting in my bubble.
Right.
Don't talk to me. Right? But whereas that was not how you behaved your whole rest of your life leading up to this point,
right. The
alternative is if you actually engage in it, there's an empowerment that happens between you and yourself and with the assistance of people like Fritzy that are there to kind of help guide you into this thing that you haven't faced before, right? So you modified the person's health. I'm smiling because I'm glad that he did it, but there's a certain amount of hysterics about this, is that he modified the house. So we kind of like, he modified the house. Now he feels safe enough to go get the procedure.
Yeah. Right.
When he comes back, he doesn't have to depend on his wife.
Right.
So that is assuaged.
Right.
And
right.
Now he can actually recover.
Right.
So that
right.
he could be there for his wife.
Right. Right. So now he can heal and he can move on. So other examples.
And what did you do in his case, for example, for modifications?
Well, for him, we added the safety bars in the bathroom because folks somehow seem to always not want to put those in.
Right.
As beautiful now as the products are.
Right. And let's talk about that for a minute because, I mean, we'll give a shout out to sort of certified aging in place specialists, right? Certified aging in place specialists, CAPS, it's a certification that's offered by the Building Industry Association.
Right.
Right. It's been around for a little bit.
Yes.
We were laughing before the show. You know, when I went and got it in 2008, I had to go to Chicago, where if I left, took the exit and went left, I'd go to Joliet Prison. And if I went I went right to the hotel, and I was there for 2-3 days because I could not get it in California,
right.
Because even as much as it is today, true, back then nobody did seasons in California. Nobody changed clothes from summer to winter. Nobody pulled saws on driveways. We do not do change in California. It should be on the friggin' seal of the state. No change happens here, right? Whereas the Midwest and places like that, out of necessity and weather and so forth, there's a little bit more of an ingrained training in people growing up that you put salt because you don't want to slip when it's snowing and icing, right?
Right.
Things like that. So we went to Chicago and got this. And to a certain extent, we still, I think, are not prepared. We don't have enough people out there that are providing the service. So it's even more critical to find the people who know to help guide you.
Right.
And things like on the product sides, like the liners for tubs or showers, everybody goes, oh my God, it's going to be like, you know, $10,000 walk-in tub thing. No, there's other options. There's other things that are aesthetically pleasing now.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? And it's come
beautiful.
I mean, to your point, the grab bars, they've come a long way to where they almost look like, you know, very elegant towel bars almost now.
There are some that some that look like tree branches.
Right.
There's some that, you know, the Italian ones come in all the colors.
Right.
You can get acrylic ones that could go on the tub for your grandkids
right.
that have little bubbles on them.
I mean,
they're just
and again, thank you for bringing up the grandkids, because the other thing we need to, I think, change thing in our thinking. Paradigm shift from the fact that these kind of things are not just handicap accessible medical. This is, you know, we used to talk about, you know, ADA.
Right.
And every developer, everybody I've ever worked for looks at ADA like it's a red you know, cape being thrown in front of them, and they're going to charge it as a bull. They hate it. They don't want to do it. They consider it a waste of money, blah, blah, blah.
How can I get around it?
And it's always dealt with a minimum, from a minimum requirement right. to comply.
Just
when
to-
unfortunately, the if you just looked at it slightly differently, it's actually a opportunity. And then we start talking about universal design.
Right.
And that's been around since the 90s, I mean, that I remember.
Right.
Right?
Right. Right. I describe universal design.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to basically differentiate that.
Yeah, universal design has seven principles, but it's really to make an item in the house essentially invisible mm-hmm. in terms of safety, mm-hmm. But usable by people of all abilities and all ages. So you can be young, old, tall, short,
right.
one hand, two hands,
right.
whatever it is. And a universal design example that I use frequently in class is a motion-activated faucet,
right.
because everybody can get water out of it.
Well, and they have ones now where you have the color coding with the LED,
right.
so there's a less chance of scalding.
Right.
And again, we talk about this being for, you know, we kind of rebel against it and don't want to do it when we add the word senior recipient on the end of it. But then when the minute I tell you, how about we put it in the kids' bathroom, and you go, oh my God, that's so great, the kids will love it.
Hmm. Right.
Right. And but it's really funny, because that's an item that actually is across generation.
Absolutely.
Right? The height of counters.
Right.
Right? Is another one. You know, not everything is a belly up to the bar kind of situation. It's not necessary, right? And in many cases, if proactively, would you agree with me that if proactively approached, those are not necessarily such a higher additional cost. It's just a different way to do something.
Right. It's a different design. So frequently now, people who are doing remodeling will make at least one bathroom with the roll-in shower, the no-threshold shower.
I just did one in San Clemente.
Right. Beautiful linear drains, lovely hardware, multiple shower mm-hmm. heads. And I had a designer who measured the eye height mm-hmm. of her client, mm-hmm. and she put the accent tile mm-hmm. in that bathroom at the eye level because her client had macular degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I look at the bathroom, we see accent tile, mm-hmm. soap dish, mm-hmm. lovely. But for that client, it was right where she had any vision at all.
Yeah, there's an additional built-in, subtle, not right. blatant, assistant element in there that is using a decorative, aesthetically pleasing item. Yeah, we did, and I'll, for those who basically also may think, oh, but, you know, what about resale value? You know, we're all about real estate in Southern California, right? What about resale value and stuff like that? I'll tell you something. I would rather personally advise a client to put in a walk-in shower, or I should say a roll-in shower, mm-hmm. right? Or walk-in shower.
Right.
Okay? Anytime, rather than a soaking tub. Okay, and I keep threatening about writing this article, and I'm halfway through it, and I think I'm going to just go friggin' finish it, right? I will tell you a couple of things of why. First of all,
you're talking about those walk-in tubs
yes,
that they
first
do all
of all,
the time on
they're
TV,
expensive, yeah. And I know we have people that are in the National Aging in Place Council, and there's no disrespect to anybody. It's not a one-size-fits-all. We said that, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you have a therapeutic need for the soaking, that it actually provides you relief. And I'm all for it. I do enough spas, okay? So I'm not knocking hydrotherapy at all. But unless you're going to do that, unless it's something that is part of a regular regimen, I mean, how many times do you friggin' use a soaking tub in your master bathroom?
Never.
Right. But yet, you won't buy a house that has a master suite without a soaking tub. I mean, most people will tell you, realtors, like, oh, no, it has to have that, right? It's the appearance.
Right.
So it's an aspiration element versus a need. Anyway, but I digress. So with the walk-in tub, okay, they always show you, and next time you guys watch the ads, I mean, I know you guys know, you've heard me, like,
yeah.
scream this, right? But every time you watch the ad, the lady's stepping in nicely in her robe.
Mm-hmm.
She's sitting in the tub with water and foam and suds all around.
Looks good.
Right? She's walking out of the tub and with her robe back on.
Big smile.
She's like, big smile. Oh, my God. It's like, you know, heaven. I just had like four hands on me massaging
yeah.
me there, right? First of all, it's a one-door system. Now, I understand that the walk-in tubs or the step-in tubs or whatever have different options on the market now.
Right.
But the principle is I got to fill that tub
mm-hmm.
in most cases while I'm in it.
Right. Oh, you have to be in it.
Right?
Yeah.
So think about this. A frail person, who is sensitive to temperature, that could slip, is going to step into an acrylic tub and sit in there and turn the water on and fill the tub up
just the
while they're in it.
Yeah.
Now, meanwhile, they got their robe on, right? And I know we're on camera. So we got the robe on, and I got to take the robe off while I'm still sitting without standing up and somehow find a thing to hang it on, right? Hopefully, whoever designed the friggin' remodel basically puts a heat lamp above this thing so it's a little bit more warm for me. And you know how beautiful those heat lamps look like, right?
Yeah.
And then... then, yes, I understand there is a large water flow option now where it can fill faster. There's a big drain where it can drain faster. But now I got to also, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Now I got to wait for it to drain out before I step out from a wet acrylic tub onto the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not a double door submarine system.
Yeah.
I don't walk in and fill the water, walk in, close one door, open another one. I wish somebody would build one of those. They'd make a killing.
Yeah.
Right? But here's the other hidden cost. Okay, you in most cases will have to replace the size of your water heater in your house because the tub will need more water.
Oh.
60 gallons.
Right. That's not the average water boiler in the house.
No.
Right. So you're going to have to do that as well. And what have you gained? You've gained the therapeutic soaking component, right? But what you've also lost that you would gain with a walk-in shower is the continuity of that flooring material into all the way to the back corner. To Fritzy's point, with the linear drain, which is very nice, in many cases you could even incorporate into the tile work.
Mm-hmm. Linear meaning it's along the wall.
It's just along, it comes from, where the air conditioning grids used to be quarter, rectangular, square, and then somebody came with this sort of linear diffuser. It's about that big. It's basically, in many cases, it takes the same kind of piping. It's a single point drain, but it's just collecting water along the trough and dropping it down. So... and like I said, there are ones now where you could just continue the same material of your floor. So it's just, I don't necessarily recommend those because it's very thin and stuff collects, suds and everything. But you could do that where it's almost invisible. Now you just made your shower or your bathroom 2 feet wider, deeper.
Mm.
Now the floor just got bigger. So if you're going to talk about resale value, I just made a room that used to be a powder. By reorienting and taking maybe, let's say, which is what we just did, taking this outside closet area that was the lead into the powder, and we just put in a shower.
And you know what else you've done that
And we added value to the house, but not only in terms of by adding another fixture in the bathroom. We added a value to the house because in most desirable locations, the people that have the deepest pockets that are going to want to buy and relocate to places like Laguna and Beach or San Clemente or whatever may very well be that age demographic that still wants to entertain, that still wants to have a quality of life, that's looking at another 20, 30 years of basically being mobile and active, but at the same time, maybe either caring for a parent.
Right.
Part-time or otherwise.
Right.
Or they themselves may do that. And I'll tell you this. They may have a kid who gets injured doing surfing. Right. Are you going to basically take them up and down in that interim period where they may be immobile or in a wheelchair or something? Or if you had a place downstairs, wouldn't that also help that?
And I'll bring up one other point that I saw in Space. See, in Space with my aunt and my late mother and late father had the same problem, and that is thresholds. When you go from one material to another, when there is a threshold of a doorstop, a change in surface.
Well, you've said change in surface even.
Right. They stop and freeze and fall. And so if you're saying a walk-in tub, I've got to change surfaces, I've got to go from something, one thing to one that's maybe slippery or something there, that's a huge...
Right, but that's a visible height difference, for example, in the case of the tub. But I'm going to let Fritzy, why don't you take the threshold thing? Because you started talking also about zero thresholds, which most people don't know what that is.
Well, zero thresholds are really entries that are smooth from the exterior to the interior.
Yeah, but that's only good for seniors, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nobody has grandchildren.
I'm just teeing her up.
Yeah, nobody has grandchildren, in strollers. Nobody has new appliances delivered by an appliance company with a great big hand truck trying to bounce the appliance up the stairs. Nobody gets appliances.
To an opening that could be a double door because you don't need a double door, right? I mean, unless you have a wheelchair or a walker, you'll never need a double door, right? Baloney. Everybody who's listening knows that I would love to have a double door into my house somewhere, right?
Right, somewhere, But even now, they have the small transition thresholds, so that you have, if you have a sliding glass door, you can just put a small threshold so you can just, if you wanted to walk up and down it without catching on it, then you can do that.
Which,
so
by,
if you're pushing...
Thresholds are huge. My mother fell all the time in thresholds in her house. My aunt freezes at every threshold.
And the other thing about that, though, is also when we have cognitive changes... We stop not because we're afraid of falling at the threshold, but because of what we see and how our mind processes what we see. So it's a combination of things. It can be a physical thing going on in our mind as well as some fear of falling.
Well,
as
it could be vision impact. It could be depth sense.
Perception.
Right. There's a whole bunch of different things happen, which really makes it very. Challenging. I mean, we're working on an assisted living, a memory care facility right now in Orange County, brand new construction, and it's the assumption is that you need to keep colors calm, right? But at the same time, what I've seen is where colors are kept calm, there's no sense of orientation of where I am.
Right.
Right. So you need contrast. You can be calm, but you still need contrast.
Right.
And the other thing about those transitions too is lighting.
Right.
Because our eyes that are older will be very much affected by glare, going from a dark space to a lighted space, or not having.
So can I give you a silly example?
Before you do, Paul, hold on. But all of the stuff that you're talking about, again, I want to bring it back again to this point. All of these things are beneficial for everybody.
Absolutely.
Okay, we have an epidemic right now going on with, there's a book called Glow Kids that's amazing. If you guys haven't read it, you should look. It's about the addiction to online browsing. Okay, that kids. Okay, my brother-in-law is a laser eye surgeon, right? Mm-hmm. The degeneration that's happening in children's eyes because of the monitors, basically a generation of monitor watchers,
right?
Imagine what that is going to be like when they get to now be compounded with age effects.
Yes.
It's like hearing. That's been one of the things that affected boomers and the early concert goers.
Right.
For example, have exacerbated
damaged
hearing loss than the generation before.
So let me give you an example of threshold silliness, stupidity. Last independent living facility we went and looked at with my aunt, they wanted to take her from the second floor. And I said, I don't think you can make it down with your walker all the way down to the first floor. And it's a beautiful big elevator. It's easy. I said, okay. So we took the walker. I said, go. Pretend you're going down and we'll stand behind you. First, she had to lean over and hit the button to open the elevator door that only stays open a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And as she walked up to the threshold, there is this metal plate that separates one another. And there is a hole in the ground where the door, where the elevator goes up and down, right? It's only maybe an inch wide, but there's a hole that you have to step over, a gap. She froze at that. And as she and the light inside is different in the elevator than the light outside. So everything you talk about is, and there was a bump there, and there was a hole, a gap there, and all these things there. So as she froze, what happened? The door banged on her, closed and banged on her, and she totally freaked out. And the lady said, oh, you'll get used to it. I said, no, you won't.
But you see, that's where we assume that, like, building codes and things like that are dealing with this stuff. They're dealing it, but again, I'm glad that we have them, but they're dealing with
her.
But the code, meeting code, is usually done for a number of reasons, including cost, from the point of minimum compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stuff we're talking about, that you have a little bit more control and hopefully have enough resources internally, and if you catch it earlier, then it's sort of cheaper. If you're going to do that remodel in the kitchen or remodel in the bathroom or whatever, then bring in some of this thinking.
Right.
You know, putting in that...
How
much does it cost to put blocking in, like plywood blocking in a wall for future possibly attaching a grab bar?
Not much.
I don't...
Right?
Before you close the wall. It's basically the cost of the materials itself.
So before you do that remodel on that house, you move from Villa Park, let's say, to Laguna, and you do that remodel on your house, and you're waiting 3 months for the tile to come in from Italy, and you're going to put it on the bathroom wall and everything like that. While the wall is open, put in about 20 cents worth of blocking, but have somebody tell you where they should go.
So you can attach your grab bar
someday. So that, in heaven forbid that you should have to do that, right, then you know that when you or the caregiver or both, which, again, this is the thing, those grab bars are not necessarily for a one person. That's a person who's helping a person bathe.
Absolutely.
Right?
Which Absolutely.
Is combined the weight now. Right?
Right.
And there's a lot more better stuff off, you know, that's aftermarket. Mm-hmm. But it's like anybody who buys a car, right? The more stuff that you, bells and whistles that you get from the manufacturer, the nicer your and more appealing your car is. You can go to aftermarket, which is a huge business, but then now your car looks like it's
so
all, you know, from all different
on
places.
So you're working on an assisted living facility right now, or you were looking
memory
for
care.
Yeah. Memory care, okay. And I pointed out to you as you walked through your design is beautiful, but I said, what about this threshold? What about this change in
surface?
What about this elevator? What about all these things? Those are the things I've seen that become giant issues.
But that's why Fritzi's book is actually a really good thing because, you know, and there's a gentleman, I'll give a shout out to a gentleman by the name of Ryan Malloy, who a while back dealt with the same thing with his mother. He was the younger kid or mm-hmm. later kid. And he looked around and all he could find was white papers about aging and how to deal with this and how to navigate assisted living and all this stuff. It was just white academic papers. And to a certain extent, that's still the case, mm-hmm. right? But so he started a blog. Mm-hmm. What he knew was internet and what he knew was technology industry. And he started a blog and basically his blog was it was almost therapeutic. He was kind of going through this thing and sharing what he found. There is not that information out there that is easily available, nor is it packaged in such a way that it's about stories. It's about personal references. What you told me based on what Aunt Florence experienced and your experience with our Aunt Florence made us go back and look at our design, and we were glad that we were there, kind of, mm-hmm. but we did actually make some modifications relevant to texture. Mm-hmm. Because the other thing I was touching about color, right? Mm-hmm. But you could be colorblind.
Right.
Right? So the contrast is important, but if you're counting on color to do it and somebody happens to be colorblind and have depth perception issues, then what do you do? So you're trying to come up with universally applicable, holistic ways to improve an environment for people. And it's not easy.
No.
Right?
It isn't.
Right.
It isn't.
That's why we do it on a one-to-one, because it's a little bit more manageable to customize that solution.
Right.
I know
that a lot of those of us who are in kind of the universal design world and would like to have new homes built with universal design
features. At least some of the basics that are needed, right?
Different counter heights in the kitchen, you know, some of the extra lighting, the motion sensors. Another topic that's going to really hit home is all of the smart home technology, because that's moving very, very quickly. And there will be ways to help people who are Aunt Florence's generation.
As long as it's built into the actual build-out. Because the other side of that is that if it's an aftermarket, then it's the cost. And it's kind of a bizarre thing, right? You got people that are going to be in more need.
Right.
And they have the means, but the means are based on savings and not continuous income generation.
Right.
And
right.
so, you know, we're seeing the impact of a growing generation in age impact everything. I mean, most municipalities are based and structured on the financial model of sales tax.
Right.
Right. What sales tax is happening when people have bought their house in their 70s, have no plan of selling it.
And don't go shopping much anymore.
And don't go shopping anymore. Right. Where is that going to come from, right?
Right, right. Right. I mean, it's going to be collected by Amazon if they collect it. So
well, right. Yeah.
But there are a number of the technologies like the Alexa, mm-hmm. like the Echo. And
I used it this morning.
And people are using that as a personal assistant.
Right.
You could have, Aunt Florence could have Alexa tell her a joke, check on her medication.
Remind her of when to take it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting idea.
Yeah. And I share a story of a woman who started out with one for her dad, mm-hmm. and, you know, she said, you know, tell Bob to take his pills at 10 a.m. Well, I'm on the phone with one of our AgeSafe advisors, and I'm describing that story, and my Alexa, my Echo goes, okay, I'll tell Bob to take the pills at 10 a.m. So now I have a reminder in my office, 10 a.m., Bob, take your pills.
Yeah.
But the woman writing the story was really, Alexa became her personal assistant.
Yeah.
And it's not the same as having a person there with eyes on Aunt Florence that can give you an update.
Right.
But it's another way for her. I mean, she's engaged clearly with Fox News.
Right.
But there's another way to stay engaged and to have your voice recorded so that she could hear from you on a regular basis. Or she could say, Alexa, add something to the shopping list for Paul.
Right.
And all you then on your app, you see everything on her shopping list.
Hmm. Well, then the great thing about this is I remember when Echo and then Alexa, or Alexa and then Echo, when they came out.
Mm-hmm.
They were never intended for the Siri industry necessarily.
No,
they were just they were just like this sort of, it was almost like Siri on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
For anybody who has an Apple, right? It's like Siri on steroids, and it was a Siri's remote terminal versus on your phone.
Right,
right. So that was how it started, but it was phenomenal how quick that thing became adaptive technologies for seniors, and it wasn't necessarily being pushed for that,
right.
But it was the end user, and it was around Christmas. Mm. All of a sudden, those things were flying off the shelf at Amazon because we bought one for my dad, right? And then next thing I know, the next Christmas, my sister gives me one, and I'm like, "Am I older?
Are you trying to tell me something?"
But my dad's like this, mine is like this, so I was okay.
Dad's big, yours is
I got the smaller model, right?
Right, exactly,
but I use it all the time. And I think, let's just remind people of just how big a problem overdosages.
Oh, yeah. Like
Incorrect dosage or overdosage.
Mixing it up, taking the
I forgot. Did I take my medication today or not? Well, I better take it anyway. Now I've just double dosed.
Yeah. Fortunately, right? My aunt doesn't have the problem. My dad used to. So we only got a few minutes left. Somebody tweeted in. I don't think we've given your guest time. Let's give her 5 minutes here to tell us exactly what you do. How it works? Do they
Off with the website too?
Are you a paid consultant? Are you do you just work with individuals? Do you work with entities? What? How do you work? Who do you work with? And
was that the tweet that we got?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
What she do?
Okay. So what I do is yes, I am fee for service. So I consult with seniors, grown children, whoever it is that wants to engage me to do the assessment of the house. And from there, we develop they get a plan. So things they could do right away, things that family members can do if they have family members, shorter term, like 1 month to 3 months, and then maybe 6 months out, depending on where we're going. I also offer a follow-up program, which is a monthly subscription, and if you wanted me to go check on your dad every month, then you would hire me to do that. Every week I would call him, and once a month I would go back and visit and make sure that the ground cover hasn't grown over the walkway, that the lights are still
almost that companion thing that you were talking about.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Except that my focus is really the fall prevention and the home safety, because that's what I'm looking at. So I'm working, that's what my Household Guardians business is about, and I am an instructor for National Home Builders for the Certified Aging in Place Specialist Training down in San Diego. So I offer that once a month. Folks don't have to go to Chicago anymore. We we do it right here, 3 days. So I'm working with that. And
it wasn't even a good time of year to go to Chicago. So
It's tough.
I'd rather do San Diego.
Is there ever a good time of year to go to Chicago?
No. I might be needing a refresher. So the San Diego sounds good to me.
Yeah. Well, trust me, if you've done it once, you don't need to do it another 3 days. But
I highly recommend the
Universal Design follow up for your CEUs. I'm just saying.
You know, it's an excuse to go to San Diego.
Okay.
How receptive are today's designers and architects to this idea of universal design and aging in place? Is this still cutting edge? Is this still the few? Or has this become the common?
That's kind of a tricky question because I describe universal design as an overnight rock star who's been playing in the garage band since 1986, finally wrote a song that's on the Billboard charts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's the same thing that's been going on for 30 years. So there are some very strong advocates and on the architectural side and on the designer side. People if you're passionate about it, you have the conversation with your client, no matter how old they are, when they're talking about remodeling.
Right. You work through that discomfort, which is usually the barrier.
Right. And there are some, because the aging in place conversation didn't really get the national attention and across the board attention until really relatively recently. I would say maybe even in just the last 12 months.
Wow.
You see much more conversation about it. Mm-hmm. And part of it is that technology and products are now finding a market for their products.
Mm-hmm.
They could have designed a fancy grab bar 15 years ago, but they weren't sure anybody was going to
buy it. Yeah.
I'll tell you another thing, Fritzy, which I think why, is because the end user, quote-unquote, is getting mentally younger. I think it's the baby boomer market that doesn't want to get older,
right,
but understands that we have to deal with this thing called aging somehow.
Change, yeah.
So how do I do it in a manner that is appealing and cool? And your generation pretty much has tried to buy that solution from whatever, you know, whatever phase of life they had.
I'll give you an odd example.
So I think that's a part of it, is it's becoming a little more acceptable and kind of part of the mainstream conversation because a larger audience needs it.
Right.
And to your point, the technology and stuff doesn't look like it's a medical instrument.
Right.
I'll give you a crazy example that just occurred to me. When I, a number of years ago, I had to get bifocals. I fought it because that's an old person's thing. And I would look like I had bifocals, like my dad had bifocals.
Right.
It was so obvious that he had bifocals. But now, of course, we don't even think of it because they have transitionless, where you don't see, you can't tell I have bifocals because it just seamlessly transitions from one to the next. So you're talking about the same sort of thing, products that will be created and are being created that will hide the fact that they're for an old person or not look like they're overwhelmingly designed for somebody in need.
Oh, absolutely. And we just now have another example right across.
Yeah, granny glasses.
Those, yeah.
Well, but I want to just point out, to Fritzy's point, half circles, mm-hmm, been around since Benjamin Franklin?
Yeah, right.
Right.
Okay. These are by Ted Hoschka, and they're Hoschka Vision. And I'm going to give a shout out to Ted. It's H-U-S-C-H... K, I need glasses to see avision.com. These things are, he patented these.
You got to talk more into the mic.
He patented these, okay? And they're basically shaved,
mm-hmm,
right? Here's what's cool about these. I can be working on drawings on the computer, and I can look at Paul, and I don't have to put the glasses on my head or dangle them around my neck.
Right.
My aunt, who I was talking about in Chicago, had reading glasses.
Mm-hmm.
She went and got her cataract operation the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to her using my phone, my technology, right? I talked to her to check in on my auntie using FaceTime, right? And I asked her, why does she still have her chain and glasses hanging around her neck? Because I was calling her to check on her operation. She's like, oh, it's great. I can see with that. I said, so why do you have your glasses around her neck? Out of habit, she was still wearing her glasses around her neck, even though she had just had an operation.
But you've hit on a point with the glasses and my example, what your
cool
guest is saying.
They are cool. They are
we've got to find ways to make old products to adjust to the change to look cool for the baby boom. It can't look like... Oh my goodness! I have to do this now, and everybody will know I'm old and infirmed.
Well, and it started also, you know, like I had that reality aha moment also with cell phones. Okay, when the smartphones came out, I had a friend of mine who was working for a company called Cricket or doing some things for Cricket down in San Diego, and Cricket was primarily a cell phone provider, equipment provider for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Big, you know, it's like, you remember the old remote controls with the big buttons?
Yeah,
you know the. That was almost like a novelty purchase on Christmas.
Right.
Okay, so what happened is they were spending all this money trying to basically do a newer website that ironically was mobile enabled, but they were still selling the same phones.
Yeah.
We're like one generation from a flip phone, right?
Right.
And here I am with a Samsung smartphone, right? And I said to him, I said, your product's going to be obsolete in 6 months. And he says, no, why would it be obsolete in 6 months? Blah, blah, blah. I said, because a 60-year-old sitting at Starbucks because he has all the time in the world to basically drink coffee for 3 hours.
Right.
And the kid who's in looking for his first job but can't get it because the economy's crashed are sitting across the way from each other, and the kid looks like a cool guy that everybody wants to talk to, and the senior that's sitting in the corner doesn't want to be thought of as the old fart in the corner. Yeah. Both have can now both have the same phone, and based on the app and the setting on the screen, you wouldn't know that I have a bad eye problem.
Right.
You wouldn't know I have a headset in. You wouldn't even think that I can't hear without it.
We have to find ways
it.
To hide right. all these things for right. us these days.
Right. right? So again,
hide the grab bar, hide all this stuff, right? Hide the threshold.
So the people that stay on top of this kind of stuff, to Fritzy's point, are people that. I was going to say that we have nothing else better to do with our time. But no, it really is because there's a passion for it. Mm-hmm. And there's really a belief, I think, that it can be a holistically achievable thing. Certain degrees, based on certain resources, etc., of course. But things as stupid as just make sure that everybody who builds a bathroom from day one has blocking. I don't care how right, much exactly. plywood you put around there. It's like two sheets of plywood and then you're covered.
Right.
Right? right. Never again do I have to basically, at the time of my need, where
retrofit.
I am I'm emotionally impacted because I just had surgery or I got injured, right?
Or financially impacted.
Well,
you
but I'm emotionally impacted. I just went through this very wrenching thing of basically whether having surgery or being, you know, unbalanced and falling right. or whatever, to your Aunt Florence's, you right. know, feeling very, very vulnerable. But I'm living in my house that I've been in for the last 10 years. And, you know, the kids about 5 years ago when they went to college, I remodeled my bathroom. And I really, really had been craving to get this particular tile, this particular marble. And I put it on my walls.
Right.
And
it's
boy,
beautiful.
I go into that room and I just have that whole, that give back to me. I feel like it's my sanctuary. And what do? I slap an aftermarket grab bar into the wall that doesn't happen to have plywood, and I'm okay when I'm in it, but then I need assistance. And now all that expensive Italian marble that I waited 3 months falls on the ground. So now I am addedly physically impacted,
right.
emotionally impacted.
Right.
I really feel like the world is coming to an end. My whole environment and safe haven is falling apart around me.
Right, and it's going to cost you
a ton of money in a fire drill, come in and take care of it. Plus the fact that if you don't do it in a timely manner, I cannot be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And all I needed is a couple of sheets of plywood.
You know what's falling apart
right.
is our time
right.
frame. So let's have your guest give us our plug for a book and her site and all that stuff. How do they find you? How do they get it? And how do they learn more?
Okay. So my website is householdguardians.com. My book is Grace and Grit: Insights to the Real Life Challenges of Aging for Adult Children and Their Parents, and it's available in iBooks and Amazon. So you can probably still get it through the site too, but if you're supporting a charity through smile.amazon, please do that and buy my book that way. And my toll-free number is 800-984-1186.
And you work with individuals, or you work with bigger groups, or whatever, builders.
I work with from individuals to builders to board and care owners, really anybody who is looking at the home safety market. And I love to talk, just FYI. So I'm happy to do workshops on aging in place and home safety, and I do the AARP Home Fit mm-hmm. presentation as well. So if anyone has a group, a professional group, faith-based group, senior group, anybody, I'm delighted to offer this as a conversation to really get folks started
It really is a mindset, right? I mean, it's
yes.
a mindset change, and it's a mindset change that you have to tell yourself. By doing so, you are more empowered.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I just wanted to point out is the boomers are really being trained now uh-huh. for telehealth, because we have Fitbit
right, right.
and Garmin.
Right.
So pretty soon you can get the same device, and inside the band will be your EKG, mm-hmm. your blood pressure mm-hmm. monitor, all of those things, and you'll wear it on your wrist, and you will look cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But all of that data is going to go to a physician. Mm-hmm. And so we're being prepped by the things around us, but you're absolutely right. And we still need to be, people need to still make the decision and take the action and be empowered by their own action.
Yeah, you have to take personal responsibility and accountability and initiative to do this. This isn't just going to happen for you. And if you don't, you're really going to find yourself, just like everything else in life, if you don't take proactive action, you're going to find yourself on the receiving end of stuff that you may not like. I will ask you for a couple of things, Fritzi, is please come back.
Thank you. I'd be delighted.
Yeah, I think you and I could probably talk about this forever, right? I mean, I've only been talking about it since 94. When I actually found a thing that I had put aside when I was going to design school in 94. When I came back in 2008 to California, I was going through some rummaging through some stuff with my folks, and there was actually an insert that had been in a magazine in 94 that I had put aside for some reason, and it was all about universal design.
So there you are.
It's really funny. Yeah.
You're an evangelist.
It was just really funny. You know, I was like, well, yeah, it makes perfect sense. And it does. So the other thing I would love if you would do is would you address this for Aunt Florence, for Paul?
There you go. That'll get her to read it here.
So that we can say thank you. Because I feel like we owe her royalties as much as we talk about her.
Well, I'm the poster child for the problem. I've been through it, and I'm going through it. And I'm the one that shares their stories so other people start going, yeah, I it's me too.
And you know what's funny about that is that as much as we've talked about stuff for over 2 years on this show.
I'm not going to change.
Okay. That is the least adaptable person on the planet.
Because it's not
going
to happen to me.
Okay, well, may I recommend that just before you give this to
him, you read it yourself.
Why don't you just take a quick read?
Just a quick browse?
Yeah, okay. Take a look at the table of contents, pick a chapter or two that you think might work.
Because that's
for
the
you.
Good news about being a baby boomer is none of this will ever
hand that
to him.
Let me take a picture.
There you go.
Because none of this will ever happen.
Well, will you look at her when she hands you a gift, please?
There we go.
Yeah, look at me. Fritzi, look at me. There you go.
So, all right, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was really fun, and I think, I mean, you could tell, I can tell by you, just it's very passionate, and in many ways, it's really educating a lot of people about what their choices and options are, and it's not as anemic, to use that word kind of, but
or bleak.
As that you don't have options, you do, but the sooner you get engaged in this conversation, decisions, the more options you have.
All right.
Absolutely.
We'll leave it there.
So thank you so much, Fritzi, for being here. I really appreciate that. Again, she's also involved with Age Safe America, and you can check out more about Age Safe America at agesafeamerica.com. And Household Guardians, again, is the name of the company. And householdguardians.com is the website. And Grace and Grit is the name of the book. It's available on Amazon. You can reach me at the Rad Life on Facebook, or you can email me at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, at gmail.com, or call my cell, 949-212-8299. And I want to thank both of these people for always Paul, for always making it interesting. And Fritzi, thanks again for being here. And we'll have everybody come over, hopefully, again on Wednesday and join us on the Rad Life.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.